Welcome to Once Upon a Story, a public health palliative care podcast from La Trobe University. Hi, and welcome back to our podcast about EPC's biography program. My name is Carly, and I'm a PhD candidate at La Trobe University, and I've been researching the biography program at Eastern Palliative Care for the past 3 years. And my co-host is...
My name is Crystal Wallace, and I am the Volunteer Services Consultant at Eastern Palliative Care, or EPC. You'll hear us say both names interchangeably, which basically just means that I get to look after everything to do with volunteering.
Everything to do with volunteering. So today is our second episode. If you listen to the first one, it was just an overview of the program, the service, and what the research is about. But today we want to get stuck into the research a little bit more. So this has been a scholarship that Eastern Palliative Care and La Trobe jointly sponsored together, and they offered this scholarship that I then applied to and was ultimately successful, given. And so that was at the end of 2019 and 2020, the very beginning I started working on this research. But we might go back even a little bit further than that. And I'd like to ask you, Crystal, why did EPC actually decide to do this? Because it's a pretty big step.
Yeah, look, it is. It's a huge step. And as you know, I've been working at EPC and a part of this program now for 11 years. I knew that very shortly after the program had been launched, probably 3 or 4 years into it, we had had a master's student who had written, done some research and written his thesis around the program. And at that stage, it was very clinically focused. And so what he found were the storytellers or clients or patients, we use all three words, that they were reporting as a result of being engaged with the storytelling process, reduction in levels of pain, anxiety, depression, and breathlessness, and increased levels of self-esteem. So they were really good indicators to have in there, and it kind of makes sense because when you let people just storytell, reminisce, there is a relaxation that goes along with that, and that releases serotonin, the feel-good hormones, which release, which allow your muscles just to calm down and relax. We know that tense muscles will impact negatively on pain and on breathlessness as well. So that kind of clinically made sense on all those fronts. It's interesting because a lot of our biographers will say to us, oh, Crystal, you know, I turned up at the client's home, I felt so terrible because they look like death, literally and metaphorically, which is ironic. And here I am saying, please speak. But then they said, you know, after an hour, the person's countenance changed, their energy was different about their body and in their voice, they were sitting up straight. Later, they had fresh colour in their face, and the biographer will say, and I had to say to them, we've got to stop. Yeah. This is enough work for me to take home.
There's only so much.
That's it. Yeah. So we know that it has a really positive impact. In that 11 years, I have also constantly been on the search for any research I could find around palliative care volunteering specifically, but also biography programs, and there was a paucity. I couldn't find a lot of information around the place. And so the third factor was that we were being approached by many organisations around Australia and overseas to train them in how to develop their own volunteer biography program, and we've done a number of those trainings. So everything coming together, plus we had a large rich data source. You know, we've published over 1,500 stories. And it made sense. Plus, the funding became available, which always helps.
Does help, yep.
And it all combined together for us to be able to go into this space. And it was a joy and a delight to meet you at interview. So how about you give us a little bit about your background as to why you applied, what caught your interest about it?
Yeah, and it was quite interesting for me, actually, because So I've come a very non-linear path to this research. My academic history, educational history is pretty all over the place. But when I might cover that a little bit, but when I first saw the ad, I have to say that it really, like almost as soon as I read it, it was one of those moments that I still actually remember of going, oh, look, that's actually, they're all the things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And that's, it just really seemed to combine something that I hadn't realised I was perhaps already interested in a way that I just hadn't been able to articulate before that. And so I applied thinking, even if I don't get this, this has actually really helped me in sort of combining these different areas that I'm quite interested in, and that that might help me move forward anyway. So at the time I was actually working as a lifestyle assistant in an aged care facility. So I'd done the most recent training I'd done was the certificate for in leisure and health to be able to do that. So I was working with a variety of people. The actual residents that I was working in had both aged and disability residents. So there was quite a range of ages and all sorts of things that we would do. So we were there to provide activities and to work one-on-one with people and to essentially provide the activities that make life meaningful to help people in that way. And because of that, I'd come across palliative care, and it was, I mean, it was part of our job, but also kind of wasn't. Like, there was a crossing there, but I was like, I felt like the palliative care area was something that I was interested in exploring more, but I didn't quite know how to do that. Like, I wasn't sure how to what was there further education I should do, what course, how should I do that? I wasn't sure. So I was just exploring what was out there, and somehow I think it must have been through, I was probably following a palliative care organisation on Facebook or something, and they linked through to the scholarship ad and went, oh, look at that, storytelling, biography, like it just palliative care. It was just a really interesting combination of things. And so, yeah, that was it.
It all came together.
It all came together. Yeah. And so I think that was, it was just one of those nice little quirk of fate sort of things. So maybe I will just tiny little bit more about my history, maybe very, because it's kind of weird in that my first degree was in theatre. My master's was in church practice, or like my focus was art and spirituality. And so I have this creative background that is tinged with theology, philosophy, but not quite in the standard linear way of doing that. And then combine that with being myself a visual artist. And that was where the life storytelling thing really kicks in personally, because I've done a lot of visual art that's about my life, and so that sort of idea of life storytelling, but for me that's been through visual art.
And can I say, because we are, the listeners don't realise, but we're sitting in your lounge room and there's so much interesting art around here. I feel like I'm in an art gallery. My eye keeps getting drawn to it all. So you certainly have a very gifted ability in that area as well. And so how did that then play out into the research? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so if we chat a little bit about research details, there's so much that I could say. It's really kind of hard to give a summary. So maybe I'll start like right at the beginning, and that the first year of research, the first couple of months were really just trying to explore that area. And as you said, it was kind of difficult to find very specific research and other literature that was about those unique combinations of EPC's biography program, in that it's volunteer-led, palliative care, storytelling, because so many are other programs that are similar but different programs, they're often led by professionals, healthcare professionals of some sort, and they have perhaps a different focus. So there's lots of others that are similar, but the very unique characteristics of this biography program, there wasn't that much. And so it was a process of learning about that, sort of noticing, as you did, that specific gap, but also noticing that there was tons of other research about very similar things, but, yeah, just without that unique perspective. So the process that I went through that first year of trying to work out what to do, knowing that there had been that master's and wanting to build on that, I did want to build on that, but at the same time I had this, I guess it's because of my history, but there was this real instinct to really lean into the narrative and to really lean into that, not only as what I was researching, but the way that we researched it as well. A mimicking of the process of the biography program in the research. So I've always tried to keep that sort of at the forefront of what we're doing.
And if I can interrupt you there, it was a really, I remember us going through that progression, and it was a, so my background is in nursing and midwifery, so I come from a medical model, but I have a huge passion and interest in the arts. And so I understood where you were going, but I remember early on we were talking about, well, how are we going to do this within a health organisation that tends to be data-driven and clinically indicate, you know, looking for clinical indicators and very quantitative.
Yes, and that's always been my biggest fear about this whole thing, is that I've taken such a narrative view that it does step quite outside of that clinical approach. And I totally understand and respect that clinical approach, totally get it. But also I'm not the right person to do that. I don't have that knowledge about what to do. And so we started in a way that might be quite familiar. So I started, the first methods of gathering information were through surveys, and that's quite a familiar opportunity for many people. And a lot of that was just to get a broad range of information, just wanted to get it out there, see what people would respond, get a wide range of information. So I sent surveys to the four key groups of people who are involved in this research. The four key groups are the clients, or the storytellers who tell their story through the biography program, the volunteers who are helping them and facilitating them, then there's the staff at EPC who are connected with everybody, and then there are the carers or the family members of the people who have written their stories through the program. And so the surveys was a really general way of gathering information.
Mm.
And they included quantitative information. So we asked some sort of tick box or multiple choice and a whole lot of things like that. But there were also tons of opportunities to write comments. And so there was a lot of information that came back with those. And we were pleasantly surprised with how well they were responded to, because we, particularly the carers group, the family, we really had no idea.
No, we didn't.
How well they would respond to this.
I knew the volunteers would respond quickly and fast and in large numbers, which they did, because that's the kind of volunteers we have. They're very, very emotionally responsive, invested in this program as well. But the carers, I always had a question about, and they were a huge surprise for us.
Yeah, and so it was really great to get that perspective, because they've got a historical perspective. They've had time to think about this, even if it has only been just over a year or 2 years. Even if they haven't been consciously thinking about it, it's sort of been there in the back of their heads, and they have suddenly have this opportunity to respond to that and to tell their story about that experience. So there were surveys, and then the surveys were also my main goal, really, with the surveys, was to ask people to volunteer for an interview.
Yeah.
So obviously a lot of information did come through the surveys. I don't want to discount them entirely at all. They were fantastic. But they led us to the people who then volunteered for interviews. And the interviews with, again, each of those four groups of people were what have formed the main part of this research. So as I said when I started, this was a narrative approach. We are looking for the stories of this program. And so I came with the concepts that the idea of the research is that the story is what we're looking for, and the story is what we will then tell. But it's not just a matter of retelling the individual stories that I heard, but also then retelling all those stories together as the story of the biography program. So my aim wasn't to sort of condense them all down into a single experience. That's an impossible task. But to rather somehow, and this has always been the big question, how do we then not only simply retell those individual stories, but how do they all contribute to something larger that's part of the research?
Yeah.
And that's been both the privilege and the difficulty of this research, is trying to work out how to do that. And so part of the strongest feeling for me has always been that those stories contain a lot of wisdom and information, but also that sometimes people don't know what that information is that they're giving to me. And so I get to have this quite unique perspective of hearing the wide range of stories and then thinking about them all together and what they all contribute to and what they all say. And I heard such a diverse range of stories, but still all nearly all of them incredibly positive, yeah, no matter what.
And what was fascinating to me, because I've had the privilege of reading your draft version of your thesis. I know we go through many drafts.
Many drafts.
but what was really fascinating to me was the reflective approach that you took around that allowed for learning and relearning, and also the endless conversations you and I have had, which feels like we're going in this really fascinating journey of reflecting on the new information, finding where those patterns are. But what it does is it mirrors what goes on for the storyteller in the storytelling process. So by the retelling of their stories, they are relearning, redefining and recontextualizing their own story. And that's what your thesis, it feels like your thesis has been doing.
Definitely. That process, that storytelling, or that narratives is a way of reasoning. It's a way of working out what we think. And I think most of us do that without thinking about it. And I think I write in one of my drafts I've written that it actually felt quite ridiculous that this was actually my process of reasoning, because it felt quite natural that the way we tell stories is the way we figure out what we actually mean. And for me, that's also the process of writing. I write to figure out what I'm thinking, and that process has been just as true in my personal life as in this research, that I write to figure out what it is that I'm thinking about and how all these concepts come together. But that, as you said, mirrors that process of storytelling, that storytelling creates meaning, or that it's through the storytelling that we figure out what the meaning is. And I see that in the storytelling process, both in the biographies, but in the interviews as well, and then in the process of me trying to mix all that together. And it's gotten to a point where I have to stop doing that because we could just continually reform what those stories are. Right. I don't know. Yeah, if you tell a story about something that's happened in your life, you might tell it entirely differently depending on who you're telling it to.
Correct.
Or what you're thinking about that day, or how you feel, whatever that's it is. Right. And at some point I had to go, I have to stop doing that and write it down and this be what it is for now. And then later on maybe someone can build on that or reform that even more.
There was a really interesting method of analysis that you came across and you ended up applying to your research called the Listening Guide and some of the I poems and those kind of things. So do you want to explain that to us?
This was great. So that first year of research, a lot of that research was not only into biography programs or other life storytelling programs, but into research methods and methodologies and how was I going to do this and what analysis would I use and all that sort of stuff. And it was actually one of my supervisors who in one of our meetings, Bruce said that he had heard about or read about this analysis method, the listening guide method. And he thought that I'd find it quite interesting because obviously they knew about my interest in creativity and that was my background. And we'd already spoken about how would that impact this research? And I guess very, very initially, like really early on, I thought that creativity aspect might only be able to be sort of implemented at the end, like as a way of delivering the information. But it actually became a method of analysis as well, right from the beginning. So the listening guide method is this four-part process of analysis. So you take the interview transcripts, or even this, it could be done for surveys as well, but I'll focus on the interviews. So interviews are always transcribed. So they transfer from the oral storytelling to the written word. But the listening guide method is really concerned with retaining that connection between researcher and the interviewee. And part of that is they designate the reading of the transcript as a listening. They call it a listening so that you're reminded that you're actually listening to the person, even if you're reading the transcript. So there's four listenings at least that you go through this four-part process. And some of those steps are like listening to the whole story, like what is the entire story that they're telling? What are the individual stories that they're telling within that? And it's a way of going through and listening for the particular voices of the individual. So one voice might be that they're full of grief for the particular period of time that they're in, but they're also quite joyful that they've been able to engage in this experience of storytelling, so that they're able to retain those two things at the same time. We have multiple feelings. It's just that sort of idea that we have multiplicity within us. But one of the steps is called the I poem step, and you take the transcript. You take out the interviewer entirely, which I'm pretty happy with, I have to say. I mean, I don't mind being in the transcript, but it takes the interviewer out entirely and you're left with only the words of the interviewee. And then all the first person pronouns, so whenever the interviewee refers to themselves or me or their thoughts, they're all placed at the beginning of the line. And then any sentence that doesn't refer to I or me is taken out entirely. So you end up with this quite summarized version. And remember, this is only one step. This is not the totality. It's just one step. And research poetry is one way of looking at an aspect of the interview and learning something about that person. So you end up with this really quite lovely poem about the story of this interviewee and what they related most directly to themselves. There's a little bit of moving around with that. Transcripts are always funny things. You know, where have people actually, where's the sentence stopped? Where is it, should just be a comma? Where have the thoughts broken? All that sort of stuff. So there's a bit of creative license into exactly how to do that. But it really highlighted to me, not only were the research poems quite helpful, but it also highlighted how beautiful some of the interviews were in and of themselves almost, and for some of them, I instantly saw them as performance pieces and like these beautiful pieces of poetry or even monologues that could be delivered because they delivered such strong stories in and of themselves. So obviously different for everybody. Some of them, they're not so great in that they just spoke differently. Some people have different styles. So some people, there might just be sections or short stanzas that are quite poetic and they tell a short story. But there were some, particularly the carer interviews, where they told quite beautiful personal stories that were not just about the biography program. They were about their palliative care experience. And yeah, it just really highlighted that storytelling element. And I've probably gone on a bit long about that, really.
No, that was it was a really fascinating part. And I think it probably caught our attention because I was caught by that as well, because it speaks very strongly to our life narratives, which is all around creativity.
Yeah.
But you know, in reading it, it was like you had stripped away all of the extraneous material that we fill a conversation with, and you got to the heart of what the emotion was that the person was trying to convey.
Yeah, and that I think is one of the main aims, really, is that it retains or it enhances that personal connection. And I mean, it's very easy if you're analysing a transcript to get a bit lost in that transcript and you sort of depersonalize the individual that you once had an actual personal conversation with, and they just become the words on the page. And this really reminds you not to do that, and to actually listen to them.
Yeah. Which is actually a wonderful tie-in to the way, so you came back into person-centered and it was all about hearing that person, which I'm just remembering there was part of your thesis where you talked about the medical models and how they have morphed over time. Mm. So, you know, years ago it was the models of healthcare, it was very much the physical healthcare. But now it has moved completely in some areas to encompassing the totality of the person. So, again, getting that person-centered
view. And that is part of what I've tried to get across in the thesis, is that this program pushes those boundaries of medical models back into a more of a holistic view, which was part of the intention of palliative care to begin with, was that so Cicely Saunders, who might be said as one of the mothers of palliative care, it was quite interesting, in fact, because quite a few people that I refer to all have this very strong concept of listening. So one of her key things was listening to her patients as well. She also actually recorded them talking so that she could listen to them later on and then, really listen to what it was. And she was trying to listen to not just what they medically needed, but what they needed as people. and that, yeah, this program pushes the boundaries back into that refocusing of the whole person. They might be unwell and they might be in palliative care, but that is quite a small part of them, even if it's quite a big part of their life at the moment, and that this re-emphasises that entire life story, I guess, is one way of putting it.
That's a beautiful place for us to end this session, because our next session is going to be really interesting, because we're going to talk about the ethics of storytelling. And there are a lot of stories that I'm going to be able to share with you around, you know, because stories are not only all lovely and wonderful and grand, but if you allow someone to be their true person, you have to hear everything that they want to say. And then how do we as an organisation handle certain pieces of information? So we're looking forward to sharing that with you, everyone who's listening, in episode 3. If you would like to ask us any questions about the research or the biography program at Eastern Palliative Care, feel free just to jump onto Google and contact us through EPC's website and the contact us button there, or you can head over to Facebook and look up Eastern Palliative Care Volunteers and Friends group and join us in there and post your questions as well. And I know Carly's got some contact points as well.
Yeah, there are a few. Latrobe has connections, but also we might just pop them in the show notes. Perfect. And you can connect to us that way.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to being with you again in our next episode.
This research is supported by a Latrobe University Research Scholarship, funded in part by Eastern Palliative Care Incorporated. It is being carried out in partial fulfilment of a PhD research under the supervision of Dr. Bruce Rumbold, Dr. David Azul, and Dr. Fiona Gardner, and previously Dr. Susan Finesse. The researcher conducting the research is Carly Edgar. You can find out more about Eastern Palliative Care at epc.asn.au. You can find out more about Latrobe at latrobe.edu.au. This has been a Latrobe University podcast, produced in Melbourne, Australia, and on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people, and with thanks to Matt Bourne as our recording engineer.